Welcome to SLA, where you can learn to avoid gaslighting yourself in your language teaching practices,
break down academic gatekeeping on second language acquisition,
and girl boss your way through dynamic, engaging, and research-based language teaching.
I'm Ben Fisher Rodriguez, and my pronouns are he, him.
I'm Bill Langley, and my pronouns are he, him.
I'm Brian Smith, and my pronouns are he, they.
Let's slay.
Hello, and welcome back to another season of SLA, Second Language Acquisition for Everyone. Today, we've got me, Bill, and
me, Benjamin.
Wonderful. But before we get started today, we're going to be talking about collaborative writing in the classroom. But before we get started, some little business to get out of the way. We are going to be hosting a book discussion across our various social media. So like wherever we're at, follow along.
Blue Sky, Facebook.
Threads. Not the place formerly known as Twitter. Yeah, I'm enjoying Threads. So check us out. And we'll be doing a book study with the help of Stacy Witowski. And who has done, she's been active on the Lang Chat discussions in the past. This past year, she was on Blue Sky doing a book study on honing our craft, which was, I forget the authors. I know Florencia Henshaw was one of the editors. And I forget who the other editor was. But
that
we
was,
saw Stacy.
Kim
Potoski and Florencia Henshaw. I think that's on Klett's. I think Klett was the publisher of that.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. So you can go check that out and also go check out Stacy on Blue Sky and see the discussions that people were having about that book. We are going to be doing our book study on proficiency-based instruction, Teaching Grammar for Proficiency by Catherine Ritz and Mike Travers. This is an Actful publication. And so you can get it on the Actful website. We're going to start talking about the first chapter on August 18th, or the week of August 18th. So if you want to follow along, you can get the book in the next coming weeks and join us as we read through it. And again, it's available on Actful. They've got print editions and an ebook if you prefer an ebook. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. We will do a culminating episode after we've gone through all of the book to just have our, like, all of our takeaways. What are our biggest takeaways? So if you can't participate in the book study, you've got that to look forward to in a couple months.
I'm really looking forward. Yep. I think it's important to read the kind of guiding documents that are guiding our national organization and then their umbrella organizations, just to see what is the conversation right now? And what is the conversation that you're going to run into at professional conferences? And also, there might be places where you, and by you, I mean we, anticipate disagreeing with some of the conclusions that are drawn in any of the texts for a variety of reasons, based on our reading of SLA research, based on our experiences as classroom teachers, et cetera. And I think that's productive. I think that's a productive way to generate conversations, is to have some sort of text to bounce off of. So we're really looking forward to it. I've already started my little bit of reading, and I'm very excited.
Yeah. And then just one other kind of piece of housekeeping. If you are enjoying the podcast and you feel that you are getting something out of it, we do humbly ask for a couple dollars here or there. You can check it out on our slaypod.com website. We pay for all of this on our own. So for hosting and recording and editing software and hardware. So anything helps. So if you get something out of the podcast, we would really appreciate your support.
If you're a Brooke public school teacher, I'm talking to myself, but we appreciate your support and thanks for listening.
Yeah. And then you can also leave a review.
Oh yes.
Yeah. All right. So without further ado, Ben, what do you got to start off with?
We're talking today about collaborative writing, and that is just the process of composing a text, but not by yourself. When we're giving output tasks to our students, we can choose to ask them to do it entirely by themselves, and I would venture a guess that most teachers do most of their writing assignments individually. Or, plot twist, you could ask students to write them in collaboration with each other, either in pairs or small groups of some sort. And we are reading an article that's called Assessing the Learning Potential of Second Language Interaction in Collaborative Writing. We thought it might, to gaslight ourselves, we might think about ways in which our writing assignments have not been worth the effort, that the interactions have not been productive or fruitful, where we judge that maybe students weren't getting as much learning or acquisition from that writing session as we would hope. The first thing I think of is just, the kind of traditional approach to writing and even writing instruction to a certain extent is very based on the fabled red pen, where we ask students to write some sort of a composition, and it may be, an incredibly traditional, like, tell me about your weekend, but use only preterite verbs. Or it may be, maybe a more modern proficiency oriented, like, something is forming part of an IPA or some other performance assessment that has a more real world bent to it and does not specify the specific language that needs be used. That just says that we can use whatever language is natural. So that's the first thing, is that, like, picking a writing assignment for students to do, you should hopefully pick something that reflects a real world task or language function that they would use out in the wild. But then, often what happens is the students complete the assignment, maybe in your presence, maybe with no resources or with some resources. That's, up to individual taste. And then they turn it into you. And then it gets in your teacher bag and goes back and forth between school and home for 7 to 20 business years, and then the mysteriously one day in a coffee fueled rage, you grade all of them and put a mark for every grammatical something that possibly could have gone amiss with your students, novice or intermediate writing. And so I think
Yeah,
that.
well, I mean, the stack of papers deserves a little vacation, just as a treat.
Just a little treat. You're
Let's
just going
see.
on a little drive. See the beauty of Western Washington out my car window. Yeah, but I think that, again, we have covered also that, I think, as part of this podcast, that the use of excessive comments on student writing, of correcting every little ending, of correcting every spelling, of marking up student compositions, is not going to necessarily lead to them acquiring accurate or target structures. It may be overwhelming and demotivating to students to get that much red pen marking all over their best attempts at using the language. And they're just better uses of our time as professionals than taking the, you can't get through even you can't get through a composition in a couple minutes, and then you multiply that, like, I have 150 students, and then that's already, even if I spent 1 minute on each one, that's already hours that I'm spending. And so, what is a better use of our time than spending time marking up every single thing, whether or not the student is ready to receive that feedback in a way?
Yeah, that's the point I was going to bring up. We don't know what a student is ready to correct or not. So, what might be appropriate for one student to get feedback on isn't appropriate for another student to get feedback on. I was actually just thinking about this recently, as I'm I've got a week left of summer break, and I go back August 4th, and then students come back the following week, and I'm already thinking about my first day speech and stuff, and how to make students comfortable, to try language and speak up. And I've been thinking about how, especially in speaking and interaction like that, I am pretty good at in the moment deciding whether or not it is worth giving verbal corrective, oral corrective feedback or not in that moment. But I think sometimes students don't see they might notice an error that another student makes, and then they're like, oh, you're not fixing people's errors. I understand when someone is ready to hear a specific kind of like correction or not. So like, just know that like, if I do correct you, it's because I think you're ready. But even then, you know, like if there's any uptake on that correction. So, but yeah, giving a lot of feedback on a lot of writing is a lot and time consuming and hard. And especially like if we're doing collaborative writing, I kind of think back to like horror stories of group work or group projects. Like, how do you know who wrote what? How do you know how to assess something when there's been multiple people's input on an activity or on a task? And like, I think I'll touch on that later after we talk about the article. But yeah, like another kind of concern that I had before doing collaborative writing in my class was like time on task, managing time on task. And so that could be like another difficult thing to like think about.
So I also think about how in general education research, the jury is in on the power of formative assessment and feedback on student performance and learning, but the students have to do something with the feedback as well. And so just, this is just something to keep in the background when we're thinking about, you know, feedback and interaction about writing, is that like, if you are going to spend all that time marking something up, make the kids rewrite it, make them make it better, make them do something with that information, right, and not just sit on your hours of wasted weekend.
Something that I've thought about in terms of that is actually prolonging when I give feedback to students. So like, I might put a grade in, but like they might not see feedback until we're getting ready to do our next writing, so that it can be like fresh in their mind. I still want to think about that more. I haven't like done that, but even if it's just like, oh, I've already given you your feedback, now before we write, go review the feedback that I've given you, so that's fresh in your mind, to see if there's any benefit to that.
I think something that has happened with me in the past too is that I will just get a huge volume of compositions. And I think that because the students took the time to write them and they have a little bit more time and space to kind of talk themselves through monitored speech production, or I guess writing production. And so they, you know, have taken extra effort to kind of maybe fine tune in some aspects their writing and, you know, be proud of themselves for remembering certain words and order and that sort of thing. And what it ends up happening is that I just kind of look, you know, pass my eyes over it more or less to see that it is like roughly in the proficiency range and on task, right, and that sort of thing. And then I think that that could be potentially demotivating for a student, is to not have had some sort of interaction or some sort of, I don't want to say judgment, but I think that is some sort of validation of the work that they put in, that may be driven purely by the fact that I, as the instructor, am like overwhelmed by the workload that I made for myself. And like, you know, I think that it is worth investing time in this sort of things, because students are motivated by measures of progress that they are used to, even if we know that that input is fundamental and so necessary, and that we want to spend a lot of time on reading and listening and having conversations about texts or pictures or stories, and that the writing doesn't necessarily increase their acquisition. It can be very motivating for them as a kind of like marker of their progress. And so that has to, again, that it may be motivating for them to look down at a composition and be like, I did that. But I think that we can add a little bit of our expertise to it and say like, you really did do that, and this is what that means. And that means having, you know, good rubrics and good ways to talk about writing with students. And so that's what this article was interesting to me.
Yeah. On that, well, two things. One, so if you've been a listener, you probably know I'm working on my Ed D presently. And like, so being in the role of a student, I'm getting much more of a better feel for what kind of feedback is helpful and what kind of feedback is not. And like, even though my classes aren't language classes, like I've taken a course recently that I felt like I was not getting any kind of like constructive feedback. Like it was like noting errors without, or noting that there the existence of errors without any specifics about how to fix it. And, you know, I'm at the level of English that I can take in that feedback and apply it, but I have to get it. Like, I can't just say like, there are things wrong and not tell me like where to fix it. But yeah, and then I had another point, but I forget. But anything else before we move on to just diving into this article?
Okay, let's dive in.
All right. So today we are on gatekeeping, assessing the learning potential of second language student interaction in collaborative writing. This is by Davidson Vega, Chu, and Gallagher. It was just published this year in the journal Theory and Practice in Language Studies. So I took a copious amount of notes. I tried to write them in a way that was a little more conversational, but if it sounds a little bit robotic this first time, forgive me. I'm trying to organize, be better organized, and do more thorough summaries.
You sound like an excellent student.
Well, trying. I've learned some skills. Glad to have a place to practice. So I really just have like a bunch of bullet points. So here we go. So starting off, what is collaborative writing? Ben already touched on it a little bit, but collaborative writing is when two or more students work together to create one piece of writing. And it's based in sociocultural theory. So you might think Vygotsky and zone of proximal development, essentially that we're learning from each other, right? So in like Vygotsky's zone of proximal development, talks about like mixed ability groups, but also, you know, it's just like closer to more knowledge that you are, you've got a better chance of like getting knowledge from that experience. I think a lot of times we talk about that as like student to student, but it can also be teacher as like the like point of knowledge and, you know, like actually using the teacher as someone who has knowledge to share. Mm-hmm. And
I want to end with that. Again, like, we talk about the distinction between like acquisition and learning and like what the value of output right. is like in accessing mm-hmm. the system. And that, again, that because we can teach writing skills, which are separate sometimes from language skills, like organization and tone and voice mm-hmm. and stuff like that, that when we're talking about learning from writing, it is, you know, in some cases, you know, helping them to better perhaps draw on the required system, but then also sometimes make these conscious writing moves that are right. that are conscious and not subconscious. I would say unconscious, like language learning. Language learning, asleep.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to interject that.
No, you're fine. So like we usually talk about it in being like mixed level groups, putting students with like a fast processor with maybe someone who's not at fastest processing, but that also like denies that, or that's not to say that each student, regardless of their proficiency level, doesn't have something to offer to the other student. So even in like a mixed level, there's maybe it's vocabulary, maybe it's an idiom, or maybe it's just something that one student missed and the other one caught. I like there is learning taking place because the students are interacting to learn or to produce something. The study is also using an interactionist perspective. So that's to say that in order to acquire language, you need to interact meaningfully with the language. So you need to know what it means. You need to be like getting information from it. In collaborative writing, each writer is suggesting ideas and together they're pooling their linguistic resources to complete a task or to respond to a prompt. There have already been studies that did already suggest that doing co-writing did in fact improve individual writing. And so with that as a foundation, the authors wanted to examine like how these peer interactions create opportunities for students to learn about correct language use. And they also wanted to look at like, what do students talk about during these collaborative writing sessions. So a little background from their literature review, like I already mentioned, and collaborative writing, students together decide on the ideas, the vocabulary, the construction, and the organization of their writing. Literature suggested that students discussed word choice. For example, they gave an example of when one student said, "in the other hand," and the other student replied, "on the other hand." So just some word choice things. Prepositions are hard anyway, so like that's fine. There were some interactions about spelling. For example, an interaction said, "does skiing have one eye or two eyes?" And so students can help each other with spelling. And some other grammar points. They had an example of using comparatives. So a student said most average, and the other student corrected to say the highest average, which made sense in their context. A benefit of collaborative writing is that students can receive immediate feedback from their peer, which could help students correct their language. It's also possible that the feedback is easier to understand because they're at the same cognitive level. So like students talking to students about corrections could mean that the feedback is more level appropriate and more student friendly. And like, so I know what we're probably thinking is, okay, if we're trying to look at if students can correct each other, what if they correct them wrong? What if they give them an incorrect correction? And we'll touch on that in a bit, because even the authors of this article expressed concerns about that. Like, so what if students miscorrect one another? What happens? And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Something that I had thought about, and Ben, maybe what is your feedback, or what are your ideas on this? But if, do you think that there could be any benefit to having students give feedback to each other as it relates to like lowering the effective filter? Like, do you think they might be more willing to listen to their peers?
I think maybe yes, and for the reasons they described they described in the article, which is that sometimes students express things in a way that we just can't express. We get old and fossilized and stuck in our expertise sometimes. And sometimes hearing feedback from another student makes it more useful to them, and they're going to be focusing on similar things and be in similar places maybe in their acquisition journey, and that might be helpful. But I think also, you know, it that hinges as well on creating a culture of accepting errors and accepting attempts at communication in your classroom and not cutting down every specific little whatever. And so I think that this lends itself well to proficiency-based instruction, which is about communication, versus traditional instruction, which is focused on grammatical accuracy and perfect endings, etc.
Also, an aside that I thought would be like a benefit of doing this is that the teacher can still give feedback. You don't have to take it for a grade. You don't have to put it in the grade book. But after the students are done writing together, and after they've tried to like correct each other, the teacher can still give feedback, and the students could discuss it, the feedback together. Because like maybe we don't know who came up with what idea or phrase, so maybe there could be a little bit more comfort in like not like, oh, like if there are any errors, maybe they're not all my fault, or maybe something like that. I don't know. And you'd only have to do half the amount of feedback if you put students in pairs. So
That was one of my major kind of takeaways from this as well. And I've been thinking about this since I read Anne-Marie Chase's blog post about teaching AP Spanish, which has very clear guidelines for the kinds of texts that you're meant to produce, what they're supposed to look like, how they're supposed to be formatted, all those sorts of things. So things that are almost in a way like easier on us because they're kind of set. But that,
and oh boy, do I have a girl boss moment for you on that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just that she had her students write, for instance, the which is kind of a beast. She had them write the cultural comparison essay. What am I saying? Is it? No, it's the
argument. There's cultural comparison. Yep. There's persuasive argumentative.
It's the argumentative essay. There we go. She had them write the argumentative essay in groups so that they could pool their resources like this, but then also you know, you're decreasing the amount of feedback that you have to give, and you know, students can help each other puzzle through the feedback that you do give, or not puzzle through, I guess, hopefully understand clearly the feedback that you do give and help each other integrate it into a final product.
So some benefits that they note in the literature review is that deliberation of what is correct, and I'm always putting correct and errors in air quotes, just so you know, but the deliberation when the students are talking about what they're writing, all of it is external, rather than when students are writing on their own, they have to deliberate word choice, organization, vocabulary internally without any possibility for feedback. But when they're working with someone else to write something and they say, I think this, and then they can either be confirmed or like denied their assumption. But just the idea of like putting it out loud could just, I think, help students with metacognition, like think about how they're thinking. It could also give students an opportunity to show off the metalinguistic knowledge that they have. So like if one student it does really like that grammar stuff, then they get to teach that to the other student and they can talk about it however much they want. And they also found that in these deliberations, students also shared ideas on the organization of the writing and they just discussed the type of language that they wanted to use. And these kinds of instances of going back and forth talking about what students want to say are in this article called language-related episodes. And other research has indicated that language-related episodes tend to relate to grammar, vocab, and writing mechanics, as well as organization and cohesion of the text. I don't think I mentioned yet that the study that we're looking at was done in a university. So I feel like we might not have as many language-related events in a high school, middle school, or elementary school setting. There might be some non-language-related events going on in collaborative writing, if you can imagine that. So again, like when students share knowledge about language, it's an opportunity for their partner to learn about language as well, or learn new vocabulary. We all come with our own vocabulary, so that's also like a way to students can like help each other. And at the very least, it could give students a safe space to show off what they can do with language. And maybe even brag a little bit. Like, no, I'm pretty sure that this is how we would say this. And then you get confirmation. The article also said this kind of back and forth could provide additional input to students. I'd go on a rant about, or not a rant, but I would talk forever about that because I think that's a misconception, but also not a misconception that we have about student provided input or student produced input for other students. But that's a topic for another day. The authors gave as a benefit of collaborative writing is that if in one example a student misused a word, the other student corrected them, but then they pose the question, would the student have fixed this error without, outside of collaborative writing? If they were writing independently, would they have fixed the error? Because the student showed, they're like, oh yeah, I know that. I know that I should have put an S on this to make it plural. But they didn't. But would they have noticed that if they were writing on their own? And then I wrote these down as questions, but these are I don't need those questions. All right, so that is like the background on collaborative writing for this study. The researchers had three research questions. The first one is, do peers engage in language-related episodes that involve learners providing corrective feedback and answering peer questions? The second one, do students engage in these types of language-related episodes less frequently than in language-related episodes that involve other types of interaction? So, what else are the students talking about when they're doing collaborative writing? And finally, like I said, we would talk about, do students share correct information with their peers? So this study was done with 64 students. They were university students and they were all intermediate English speakers.
Can I interject something?
That's something to consider.
Because I looked this up. So the authors provided a review on the IELTS scale. The IELTS, I learned, is the International English mm-hmm. Language Testing System. And so I looked up a score equivalency because I was like, intermediate can mean a lot of things to different people. And if we're talking about intermediate and ACFL, it can mean something else. The rough equivalency that I was able to find in my little online poking about was that the level that these students possessed was something approximating like a B2 in the CEFR rankings, which is like intermediate high to advanced low. So they're okay. High intermediates.
Yeah, so caveat. Yeah.
Coming up on advanced language. So I think that's, that we'll caveat that a little bit later, but it's important to keep in mind.
Yeah. So this is actually like all the writing was done in a class. They didn't change the class at all. They just said, we're going to record what you talk about as you're writing. So they categorized. So they recorded. They took about 25% of the recordings to analyze. And they categorized the language-related events into corrective feedback and answering peer questions. And then other interactions. They analyzed the corrective feedback and responses as well to find out whether or not student learners were providing the correct information to peers. And I'm gonna jump around in my notes, but to answer that question, whether or not students were giving correct feedback, of the 470 language-related events that related to answering questions or providing corrective feedback, the people who they had multiple people assess the correctness of the statements, only 7 of those 470 statements were determined to be incorrect correction. And in that, there were 2 incorrect responses to a peer question. So a peer asked a question and the person responded incorrectly. And 5 times, one of the students tried to make a correction but made an incorrect correction. Again, this is only about from 25% of the LREs that they examined, but I thought that was interesting. I was expecting a different number.
They recorded some instances also too of like the primary writer, it sounded like rejecting the feedback attempts of their peer, like being like, nope. Yeah. So like even sometimes when an incorrect correction was made, it wouldn't land into the composition, which, encouraging.
And of the recordings, about 50% of the peer interactions were either providing feedback or answering peer questions. The other 50% was something else. And then just their discussion about it is that students do talk about language a lot during collaborative writing and are usually correct when giving feedback or answering questions from their peers. But again, there's that caveat that these are high intermediate learners at university level. So got to keep that in mind. They also stated that implementing collaborative writing can multiply the amount of feedback students get, and having peers give feedback may make it more level appropriate so that students can actually understand the feedback. And the researchers still had questions about whether or not this would be appropriate for lower level students. And the conclusion, it's worth a try.
This is an interesting thing. The format of their class was set up, I think this was a specifically composition related course where they had 20 minutes of instruction on some topic. They did genre based writing in like descriptive or expository writing, cause and effect, and compare and contrast writing. So they had 20 minutes of direct instruction about that, one of those writing genres, 50 minutes to write a composition kind of collaboratively, and then they would have a 10-minute review at the end. And so I think already like the format of these classes are so much different than the format of our classes here, at least in the United States and in our me and Bill settings. But yeah, that was interesting, just like an interesting thing to read about and to hear that overall it was positive and that there is a lot of research basis for collaborative writing being positive as a way to increase student writing skill over time. That most of the time, you know, these students were talking about that were making positive changes in their writing. They were talking about writing moves and grammar and vocabulary and spelling and things like that. The things that, you know, the leftover grammar grinder in all of us is like worried about, you know, wanting them to be able to produce accurate language on in the end. You know, those things did receive their attention. So I wonder if this might be portable into our classes. How about we girl boss our way into applying this into our classroom? I think you brought up the point that these are very high intermediate students who have had lots of input, lots of exposure to the language, and already displaying lots of skill. Like they're almost at, you know, advanced lows where you have to be to teach the language in the state of Washington. And intermediate depends on the state. It's usually at intermediate, higher, advanced lows. So these are, you know, learners with a lot of language under their belt, a greater sense for the languages, and more ability to correct each other based on that either gut feeling or knowledge of the language. Does this really apply to our novice learners? You know, I have my reservations. I think that, you know, this, it might not be the best use of our time to have them, you know, obviously not in the format of the study of doing, you know, 50 minutes of collaborative writing for every 30 minutes of like class instructional time. But I think we can steal some of the principles of that to come back into our instruction for our novice learners. Bill and I talked before recording about the power of something called Write and Discuss. If you have not heard me talking about zhuzhing it up with Write and Discuss before, where have you been? We'll link a blog post and an episode of the World Language Classroom podcast in the show notes, so you have access to that. But the long and short of it is that after your class has had some sort of experience together, so you have created a story together, you have discussed the calendar together, you looked at a picture, you watched a video, you've watched an episode of something, you've read an article, kind of anything that happens in your class where the students are engaging and after that, you can co-create with your class a text that is level appropriate based on their understanding and discussion of the text. And so you as the teacher are writing it on a whiteboard or on your computer, typing it up live to have a summary of what students learned and their opinions about it. And so, you know, for a level one class, it might just be if we were talking about somebody's interest via card talk, you know, it might just be like, so-and-so plays on the football team. He plays this position. They have practices in the morning. And like, it's very, you know, just pretty basic, simple sentences. With your more advanced students, you might be doing some of these like writing moves, like cause and effect, or doing more descriptive writing or whatever it might be. Or you might be modeling preparation for something like the AP email or the argumentative essay or so any of the IB tasks. You might have a specific thing that you are teaching towards, but you are, as the teacher, discussing with the students what they learned from the experience, what their kind of summary and takeaway is of it, or in whatever, you know, writing format you need. And you are doing the writing up on the board so that they are seeing accurate language composed correctly with also the thinking that goes into writing. And Bill is a huge pop-up grammar, I would say, expert. And I think that this is an opportune time to include some of these language-related episodes by way of pop-up grammar. One of the sentence frames I've learned from Bill via his presentation at ACTFL is, why is this like this and not this? Because that can help start making, you know, popping out little things for students to notice about the language that, oh, this ending on the verb goes with this subject, or we're in this time frame, so it should look like this. And to get students to start thinking, you know, about the abstract forms of language that they might start noticing and then maybe uptake in their input or maybe not. And maybe it's something that they just have in their conscious mind for accessing, especially when they're writing and they have the time to think about it. But that's a way to start talking about language and form while also still focusing on meaning, and you are providing them an accurate, you know, another accurate sample of the language.
Right. And on Write and Discuss, like, I think I would probably, like, if you're looking at maybe introducing collaborative writing as like the study kind of outlined, I think it would be beneficial to have already done quite a bit of Write and Discuss with your class so that you can model how to have a language related episode and like show how you can negotiate what you want to say. Like, oh, do we want to say this or do we want to say this?
For some reason, the phrasing of "I'm having a language related episode," that's me all the time in front of every class every day. Oh no, he's having another one.
Have you seen that meme when it's like when you can't think of a word in your first language or your second language, and it's just like bilingual?
Yeah, legitimately, he's having one of his language related episodes as a cause of his bilingualism. Oh, Lord. No, totally. I'm 100% with you. I think Write and Discuss is like a super powerful strategy. You know, every teacher that I have talked to who consciously incorporates it as like an everyday or at minimum multiple times a week gets a lot of bang for their buck out of it. Because again, it is a little bit of everything. It's the conversation that you're having with your students. So that's speaking and listening. It's the writing, mm-hmm. the modeling of writing that you're doing for them. So you're showing them how to write properly. And it's the reading of the text afterwards to kind of absorb those forms and vocabulary and everything again. It can be a very, very powerful way to model the skills of writing and just give more good input on just about anything. And yeah, I think, oh God, I had another writing class thought. What was it? Save those, by the way. It takes, you know, either take a picture of your board and then type it up, or have your student TA type it as you're going, or a high-flying student type as you go along, so that way you can have access to all the texts you've created, because they're level-appropriate texts that you created with the class. And so it's a product that you can give back to them to study in quotation marks, or to just have as another source of input, be something that they can do extension activities, etc. I was thinking while you're talking too, do we think that collaborative writing, if we were to incorporate it into a novice level class, or, you know, like I'm thinking, you know, through level 2-ish, through level 3, even into level 3, is this something we would do for something that functions more as a formative task for purposes of our, I don't know, grading and assessment system, where the summative task might be, you know, making the students do a similar task or, you know, performance, but individually? Because again, yes. The hope is that we give, you know, exactly feedback on these fewer compositions that they then are able to do something with, and that would be the summative task. Is that what you're thinking?
Yes. Yes. And I'll get to that. I've got two thoughts. I had a thought about, like, you know how like sometimes in peer review, like you do a writing and then you just like hand off your writing to another student and then like you make corrections. I think if that's something that, I think this would be a great, like, the collaborative writing and the in-the-moment feedback would probably be more beneficial, because you can actually, like, understand what someone was trying to say in the moment. And also, collaboration is cool. So, and then I was also thinking about, like, another way to scaffold students into doing collaborative writing is with dictagloss. Because they don't have to come up with the information and that. They're not coming up with, like, the topic of what they're writing. But they still do have to negotiate meaning a little bit, because they're trying to pull information from their short-term memory. We'll post a link to a video about what dictagloss is. But I think that could be also a way to get students better at collaborating and writing. On going back to, like, what you were just asking about, like, oh, students do, like, a collaborative writing and then an individual task later, like I think that's an all-star idea. I think, like, as I've been planning for this upcoming school year, I know that, like, for Spanish 4 I want to incorporate more AP style tasks, and so, like, this very first unit that I'm going to be doing, which is free on my own blog, languagely.com, it's a Spanish, an intermediate Spanish unit about, like, our relationship with pets and, like, what pet companionship means. And in the final assessment is going to be a letter write, like, an email response. So I've already built in a collaborative writing task where students have to, like, talk about which pet that they would want. And then, so they're going to do that together, and then later at the end of the unit. So they're going to do it at the beginning of the unit with some, like, a really easy text, or hopefully a reasonably appropriate text. And then at the end of the unit, they're going, after they've learned more content, more vocabulary, more structures, they're going to do a very similar email response as the assessment. And like, that was my exact idea, is like, I want to build their confidence in doing this kind of a task, but I think it would be really beneficial for them to collaborate first. And like, I started incorporating collaborative writing at the end of last school year. And I think it's going to be a thing that never leaves my classroom, honestly. So I think really cool stuff, and I think it's worth a try.
I had another question. Mm-hmm. I think, again, using this as a formative task and giving you logistically half or even less of mm-hmm. the things to grade and give feedback on, it can be very helpful. But I was also thinking about just like, how much time are we generally apportioning to presentational writing like this in our courses? Mm-hmm. And I, like, my grading categories are like interreading. This is for level one, are like interpretive reading 35%, interpretive listening 35%, interpersonal like 10%, presentational 10%, reflection 10%. And so I was like, what if I only apportioned 10% or less of class time overall to this, to, or even less, right? Like, just to continue the forefronting of input. I'm not sure it would have the same effects, but if that, you know, 70% plus of class time that is super, super input focused also contains write and discuss, then they're getting, and it's also going to be interpersonal because that's just the nature of our classes, right? You know, then yeah. If they're getting write and discuss as a modeling, then, you know, spending 10% of less of class time doing any sort of presentational writing, which could include collaborative writing tasks like this, might be just an easy way for me to think about planning this into my course. Like, I'm not doing this all the time. This is not a constant thing. But again, write and discuss is a powerful strategy for any level. And that can be, you know, the segue to either later in a course or later in the student's career, having more experiences of collaborative writing with their peers.
Oh, and like, one more final thought that I have to make sure that I shout out is, like, I originally started diving into this idea of collaborative writing because of a unit from Somewhere to Share by Carrie Toth. And I think she also cited Bethany Drew as someone who came up, like, the activity that they had in the unit was an information sandwich. And like, I've taken that format and have developed like the collaborative writing, or my approach to collaborative writing from that. So when I do a collaborative writing with level four, the class is always split. Half of the class gets one article, the other class gets a different article. And then their task when they come together to write collaboratively is to synthesize the information from both. So shout out to Carrie and Bethany for that idea, because it has really helped my planning for Spanish 4. Anything else before we get out of here today, Ben?
I'm just looking through my little notes on the page. I think we just about covered it. So collaborative writing can be a powerful way to increase student skill in learning and writing. It may be better, as described in the study, better reserved for intermediates. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that we can't begin the process of getting students into that mindset of collaboration in their writing via something like write and discuss, and via your class activities, information sandwich, it sounds like, too. Yeah. That we get them primed for that, because it can be a powerful way for them to receive lots of feedback and progress in their writing. So pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're so excited to be back and to continue sharing some research with you. So until next time, go slay.
And don't forget to get the book.
Oh, yeah. Bye.